old man waves.
Damn you, old man!
Wait.
Old ass man.
Shut up, old man. You smell like fart.
No. Man.
Old man.
Wait. He's so old, he got a podcast on cassette.
Fuck, you're old.
Damn it, Wade.
And welcome to the Old Man Wade Show. I am your esteemed host, Old Man Wade. This is episode number 2. And today I had to bring somebody in who has such a great opinion on things that when I seen a topic, I was like, I gotta talk to Miss Lady. I have to talk to Miss Lady immediately. So I last minute booked her to help me out. Miss Lady, would you like to say hello to the world?
Hello, world.
It got to be a Skype, and we're here to talk about a few things. Miss Lady, if you didn't know, is one of the most opinionated people I know, if I haven't said that already. She also co-hosts the Remember to Hit Record podcast. See, I can say it when I'm not on the show. with Diddy, Miss Lady, and myself. So today, I want to talk about race, but not race in a sense of like racism between black and white people. That's been well documented everywhere. You can't go anywhere without hearing about it. But I want to talk about something a lot of people may not know, but there is a race component when it comes to like black on black. And I want to bring up specifically some of Gilbert Arena's comments on Lupita Nyong'o. I hope I'm not mispronouncing her name. She's one of the characters in Black Panther, and apparently I still can't remember to take the volume off of my phone. But Gilbert Arena is known for being a very opinionated person. Actually, his Instagram tag name is something really... let's see, Gilbert Arena, I had it and it came off.
No Chill Gil.
Facts, No Chill Gil. And, you know, that's his thing. He's not in the NBA anymore, so now he doesn't have to worry about biting his tongue. He can pretty much say what he wants. But this is also the same guy who brought an alleged loaded gun to an arena while he was a professional basketball player. So, I guess No Chill also means, bringing a gun wherever you go. So the report from The Griot said, the former Golden State Warriors took to Instagram to comment on a picture of Nyong'o at a Mexican beach. Most of the comments were celebrating her beauty, but Arenas compared her to an ugly fat girl. Quote, everybody's saying her skin looks beautiful. How about her face, though? Lights off. Gilbert Arenas says Lupita Nyong'o ain't cute in a tirade about black-skinned women. He went on to say, this is no diff, than an ugly girl with a fat ass. He continued, I'll still beat, but just with the lights off, but she is glowing, though. I don't know what that means by she glowing, though. He later apologized, but then went back at it again. So this was July 26th. Recently, he went on and said, same link. Oh, no, that was the same link. No, he's basically back at it again, saying the same things about how he doesn't find her attractive and all that. But again,
he basically made a non-apology.
Exactly. And here it is. He goes, not to be funny, but can you name a black woman beautiful on the outside? Not brown skin, but Tyrese Black. When you have African features black, then you have number one, Lupita Nyong'o. And she's cute with the lights off. Second, you have Ajuma Nasiana. Sorry, but ew. So the black beautiful woman you boost up is technically light skin or brown skin. Yes, Gilbert Arenas wrote that on Instagram, the rest of the article said. What are your thoughts on just his comments in general?
I think that his comments say a lot about him and what he thinks, how he feels, why he made a lot of the choices he made and the women that he's been with and things like that. But I think it also says a lot about where like colorism is. And that was like a perfect example of like colorism at its worst in the black community.
Now, for someone who might not know what colorism is, what's colorism?
What I'm saying is that it's not surprising. because that has been something that people have always said. It's just we're going through, we're at a time where in history where the Black community is trying to be together a little bit more, and so denouncing that those things is a lot more prevalent. But I mean, growing up in the 90s, it wasn't unusual to hear something like that or worse as a dark-skinned person. So
now the term colorism might seem like an easy enough word to decipher, but for those of you people who can't, who are listening, how would you define colorism?
Well, I mean, the definition of colorism is intraracial racism. So instead of it being white people are at the top of the hierarchy, and then you have, you know, all the other ethnicities, it's basically light-skinned Black people, and then it goes from there based on the hue, and it follows the whole house Negro, field Negro dichotomy.
All right, so this is not me defending Gilbert Arenas, because I think his comments are a bit off the wall, but everyone likes what they like. Like, you know, some people don't like skinny women, some people don't like skinny men, some people are size queen, some people like just enough. So, like, you know, his opinions are his opinions. But I looked at it as it's detrimental just to, like, you know, for one Black person to the next. And I had a conversation with my wife about this in general. She says this is nothing new. Like you said, this was like up in the 90s, this was just the way people talk, like it was, you know, like an everyday thing. But she also brought something to my attention that I didn't think about. Just being dark in general, not even just in the Black community, but just when in Cape Verde, the light-skinned Cape Verdean
people are Black people. Let's not even go there.
Yeah. But if you look at it, like the like my wife's father was dark, like he was like dark, like Yongo dark. And she's light because her mom is white. And she was saying if she went over to Cape Verde, she would be looked at higher than any other dark person, even any other darker person in Cape Verde. And she's not even wasn't even born there. So she brings up the fact that it's not even just in like the Black community or just, you know, just between that. You have Dominicans who look at light-skinned Dominicans better than they do dark-skinned Dominicans. Or like in back to the Black culture, when someone will bring home a light-skinned woman, they'll go, oh, you got yourself a light-skinned girl. Like, that's supposed to be some prize.
Right.
Like, when we had this discussion about where it started and where it came from, and I honestly said, like, it started...
The common denominator is that it stems from the American slave trade, and it permeated to those other places from how Black people in America were treated. So it wasn't just like, it's not just like, oh, those other countries have the same issues. They have those issues because it's a systemic thing, you know? Once you figure out how to break in a pair of shoes, you're going to continue to use that same method to break in a pair of shoes, right? So it's the same thing that they did with, you know, chattel back in those days, which are the people that they owned and traded. And so it wasn't like, you know, when people got to the West Indies, they didn't talk to anybody in America. They all shared their information, and it's not coincidental that that permeates through all these different communities. But it's also because when white is the aesthetic, anything closest to white is going to, by default, be seen as better than, once you look at how the default is, you know what I mean? Like, so like, if white is the default, then of course a light-skinned, really, really light-skinned person is gonna be looked at like they're supposed to be better than people who are further away from, you know, that average or that mean or whatever, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And then you bring up the point of like the slave trade. And it even goes further than that when it's like just the word Black is always synonymous with something evil. The Black Death, the Black Plague, like, you know what I mean? And then you have something that's supposed to be pure and beautiful, it's always white. So it even goes, and it even has like a religious aspect to it, you know what I mean?
I definitely do. And it's, you know, I mean, Gilbert Arenas, there's a difference between, to go back to something you said, you like what you like. It wasn't about him liking what he likes. You can like what you like and not tear down anything that's not what you like. That is the problem with his statements, and that's why they're problematic, because whenever you hear a statement about a light-skinned girl or a dark-skinned girl or whomever, you know, a lot of the beauty standards are usually skewed towards light-skinned girls being the beauty, and darker-skinned girls are not the beauty standard, right? And it's why can't this girl just be beautiful versus being beautiful because she's lighter-skinned, or not being beautiful because she's dark-skinned? You don't have to add that in. And to me, that's where his statements, if he just said, I don't think she's attractive, okay, fine, you like what you like. But the fact that he's saying, like, going as far, he sounded like a little freaking kid in those tweets. He needs a lot of attention, and he has a lot of issues. You can clearly tell that. But the problem with his statements, and the problem with any statements that people make like that, is that it's not about you having to make dark-skinned girls your type. If that's not your type, fine, okay. But it's also about not disrespecting someone and making them seem subhuman. And again, this goes to if he was a white man saying this to a black woman, would we accept this? No, we wouldn't. So why would you accept it because he's a black man saying it to a black woman? It should be even less acceptable, unacceptable.
And I could not agree more with that, and that was one of the issues. I think that's why I got so upset about him saying it. It's like he's like, you should know better, he should know better than to say things like that, because he knows how these things are perceived, and it's already bad enough that we have people of other races saying that stuff. It's kind of like when they say don't tell family secrets, you know what I mean? And I'm going through his Instagram and I'm looking at that, and then his name, No Chill Gill. And I'm wondering, like, is this really his personality? Or is he just like, well, I'm out the NBA and I need to keep myself relevant, so now I just gotta go for shock value.
He has made it very clear that he got with Laura Govan because she's light skinned and he wanted light skinned babies. Which, by the way, his daughters are a pretty toasty almond color. So I don't understand how he could sit here and talk about a woman that is dark-skinned when his daughters are not the epitome that he claims Lupita Nyong'o needed to be.
Yeah, which I don't get, because it's not as if he's of a lighter hue himself. You know what I mean?
It's hate. I mean, you know, again, like, there are a lot of people that if you listen to them long enough, you will hear their self-hate come out, but it's projected. So, I have had plenty of people say to me, oh, don't you just wish you were light-skinned, like lighter, so that you could tan? Or, oh, I can't believe you can tan. That's so surprising, because I would think that you already have dark skin, so how does that happen? And it's like, really, I'm gonna need you to take a step back. But I've also known guys, more specifically women too, but you know, I don't really remember a lot of that type of stuff, but I've known a lot of guys that have been like dark skinned and they have a lot of color conflicted issues. Like, they always are the first person to talk about their skin complexion. Oh, well, you know, I'm the darkest person in the room. Or, you know, I don't want to go in the sun because I don't want to get darker. So they sit under an umbrella with long sleeves on. And a lot of them are islanders, which is, you know, which shows, again, like you said, like in the West Indies, that is something that's really prevalent. But to me, I'm just like, I just don't understand that, like, how you can have that ingrained in your mind so much, because, like, I didn't grow up like that. Like, I grew up where black is beautiful, you're gorgeous, and like there's no, but my skin be popping. You know, so it's just amazing to me that there are people out there, and the thing is that we've seen this growing up. You know, growing up you saw the music videos, and who were the girls that were in the music videos most prevalently and most prominently in the 90s? It was a lot of issues with fact that they were mostly like light-skinned girls in these music videos, but also the fact that people have a fetish with mixed babies lately, and the whole, you know, wanting to have mixed babies, and there's like Instagram accounts dedicated to that, and it's a fetish shot. It's basically turning what is deemed like the mixed look into a fetish, which is basically saying, you know, many of us have gotten, and even I've gotten it too, in all my dark skinnedness. Well, what are you mixed with? Because you can't possibly be 100% black with what people see as favorable features. So if you have the really curly hair, not the kinky curly hair, you know, you have like the looser spiral curls, well, automatically everybody's wondering, oh, you must have some Hispanic in you, or you must be Latina, or you know, something else that's beyond black. And so it permeates through the culture because, you know, a lot of these things are lasting from slavery and Jim Crow and, you know, all that stuff. It wasn't that long ago. So when people say we should be past it already, it hasn't been that long. It takes a long time to erase things in your own mind that you are trying to get rid of, shackles you're trying to get rid of in your own mind. If you just think about trying to change a habit personally, now you have to change the habit of generations of people. So it's not to make an excuse for him, but it's just to show that this is something that, you know, is still being passed down from generation to generation.
And I've actually thought about that, the fact that it actually, a lot of it does come from, you know, accidentally from our parents or our grandparents who, you know, dealt with the racism of the Jim Crow laws and even in the 70s, or in the 80s, where racism was quote unquote over, like the scars are still there, and like, you know, whether you do it intentionally or not, sometimes things are said that, you know, that affect you, like whether, like, you know, you're light or especially if you're darker. And like, for example, like my grandmother said something to me that I didn't get until I matured. She used to work for ABCD, and so there would be a lot of people from other countries would come in trying to get jobs and summer jobs and things like that. And there was an African family that she was helping, and she said, and her exact words were, "Mark, their skin was so dark and beautiful, it just made me smile." And I was like, it didn't really dawn on me until later on, because like it. I'm like, my grandma's light, like we're a lighter hue, and I didn't really get it until I got older and realized like my way of thinking was completely off. You know what I mean? And like there was a little hatred of my skin or darker. You know what I mean? Like, but and when I tanned, the darker I got, the more. And this is gonna sound funny. The better looking I thought I looked, like the darker I got. You know what I mean? And
right.
And again, I was the same person in the 90s making like dark skin jokes and things like that. I've grown out of that because someone may say that they're not affected by that, but even if there's a 1% chance that they might be, things like that still remain. Like I try not to make those jokes even when it's one-on-one, because, you know, like, I don't know, a person might say, "Oh no, it doesn't really bother me," but you know, how do I know they're not just saying that? So I stopped making those jokes because we're in a time period where these like things like this matter. Our skin color does matter. Like, you know, being proud of, you know, our skin matters. And I remember my wife was over, and we were talking about it, and how in one sense someone will say a dark skinned person is like, Gilbert Arenas will say, "Oh, I don't understand the allure in like dark skinned women." But you brought up a point, and my wife brought up a point, that when a company wants to model a color, they use darker women because their skin brings out the color, makes it more beautiful. And my reaction was, "Well, doesn't that make their skin a little bit more beautiful than, you know, a lighter hue?" You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's. Look at high-end models. You know, the Tyra Banks are very, very few and far between. But the Lupita Nyong'os and the, you know, Alex Weck and those complected women are the standard in the modeling industry because, for black models, because their skin is so dark, it reflects the light. It doesn't just absorb the light, it reflects it. And so when you see colors on them, those colors become even brighter. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've gone to the makeup counter and makeup artists are ready to have like a ball with my skin and on my face because they're like, oh my gosh, every color is going to look so great on you. Oh, can I just like play? Like I every time I go to the MAC stand, I get a free makeover, like a free full face of makeup because they want to try every single color on me. And I'm like, okay, I'll sit here for it. You know, that's fine. Not a problem. You know, because and the thing is that a lot of times I think the sad part is a lot of times darker skinned people do not recognize that they have that beauty about them. You know, like you don't hear all the time, your skin is so beautiful against colors and things. I mean, growing up in the 90s, nowadays now that we have social media and stuff like that, it's a very different world. But, you know, but also on the flip side, you know, it colorism has this the same effect, but in a different way for lighter skinned people who are too, you know, who are too far on the other side that people will start to question their blackness. And it's like, well, how, you're not black enough, you know? So it's like we're pit against each other, which is unfortunate because we're pit against each other basically on these little trivial things, you know? You know, so we're fighting over who's lighter, who's darker. So you're too black and you're not black enough, right? And so we're both fighting with each other. But at the end of the day, either side just wants to be told that they meet, like that they are enough.
Well, you said, so you hit something that my wife always says, that my wife is half Cape Verdean and half white. And she would always say that, like even now, depending on who she's talking to, like she wasn't, I guess, quote unquote, black enough for black people and not white enough for white people. So she was always like, well, you know, where the fuck am I supposed to fit in? Like, you know what I mean? Right. And that's actually a damn shame. And I got a buddy of mine, a couple of buddies, and even myself, when people go, oh, you're not really black. I'm like, what do you mean I'm not really black? And it's like, whenever someone goes, oh, well, you never, like, you don't smoke weed, you never been a gang. I'm like, oh, so all the negative connotations are what make me, or what's supposed to make me black.
Well, what they did there is they're undercover racist. They just don't know it yet.
Those are my favorites, the favorite undercover races. It's, I wouldn't even say an undercover. It's they're like sleeper agents.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those are, and then, you know, even though the topic is not, we're not talking about implicit bias and microaggressions, but what they just did there by saying that, why is that synonymous with black people? Do you know by sheer numbers, there are more white people that smoke weed and are drug addicts and drug users per capita? Compared to black people, you know, it's because of the imagery pushed out through media, right? And so then let's look at media and what the role it plays in colorism is. If you look at a lot of movies, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't mean that it's conscious, right? So I'm gonna be very clear about this. I'm not saying that this is conscious, but it's the same thing with microaggressions and implicit bias. Colorism doesn't necessarily have to be something that is deliberate. It could be just because it's a learned behavior. That's what people do. So look at a lot of the movies, and you'll start to notice this now after this conversation. But look at some of the movies where they have black actresses and they have black men with them playing in relationships. Now, if you look at how the relationships usually go, it usually goes that the man starts off with the dark-skinned woman, and then he comes up and he leaves the dark-skinned woman for the lighter-skinned woman, or a woman of a different, you know, ambiguous racial, you know, makeup. So she could be a mixed or biracial ethnicity, or she could be a Latina, or you know, basically the man will leave the darker-skinned woman for the lighter-skinned other, right? And so you start to see that trope happen quite often in movies and shows. Power is one example. Power, Omari Hardwick, his character Ghost is married to Tasha, the faithful, you know, ride or die wife that he's been with since high school. She's the dark skinned woman.
But he leaves her for Angela.
Angela Valdez, who is the the girl that got away, and all of a sudden he throws his whole marriage, his whole life away for her. And for the past four seasons, we've been watching the relationship go up and down. Angela is the seen as the like Latina, although, you know, regardless of whether she's the side chick or not, she's seen as like, oh my gosh, the one that got away, the one that I'm willing to risk it all for, right? And so that's what we see happen there. You look at every Tyler Perry movie, usually it's the the darker skinned woman who is seen as the drug addict, as the hopeless case that, you know, should be beaten and seen as whatever. And so, you know, so when you start to look at movies and you start to look at tropes that happen in these movies, right, you start to, I mean, The Color Purple, you know, Shug Avery was the light-skinned, beautiful, put-together woman, and Celie was the dark-skinned one who is ugly. You only gonna ever be ugly. You ain't never gonna be, you know, like, she was the one that got beat up on and, you know, Harpo treated poorly, and Shug Avery's the one that got treated very nicely and all this stuff. And she, so you start to see that in these movies, and you see why it continues to permeate through society, because you see it in movies, you see it in TV shows, you see it in music videos, you see it in so much imagery. That's why people who are darker skinned, at least in other countries, are literally killing themselves to like bleach their skin. So you see Sammy Sosa, everyone's laughing at him, like, what's going on with his skin? But they're not addressing, you know, it's all fun and games to make fun of him, but that is indicative of a very, very, very big issue within the communities of color. So Southeast Asian, Latin, you know, Latin America, and then the Black community in Africa, is people are killing themselves to lighten their skin to become the seen as not just the white person, but at the very least the light-skinned Black person, to be at that level and seen as that level of beauty. And they're destroying their skins and their bodies, you know, as a result. So it's not just something to laugh at, unfortunately. And, you know, and the internet makes a meme out of everything, but Sammy Sosa is a major indicator of what is happening to people who feel their skin is too dark.
Yeah, and oh yeah, that's again, that can take that conversation go a whole other level, especially with the Sammy Sosa thing. And the first thing I said to my wife when I showed it to her, she was just like, skin bleaching. And I, you know, I made a little joke about it, like, oh yeah, and cocaine. And she was having none, but she was like, no, skin bleaching. Like, there's not even like anything to it. He just literally does not like his skin. Which I don't know.
Here's the thing though, is that like, to get your skin that color, I mean, like Michael Jackson, like skin, because people want to say Michael Jackson had vitiligo. That mofo did not have vitiligo. That man got his skin light through a severe bleaching process, right? Because vitiligo is at best, I don't want to say, it is uneven. So you could, when you have vitiligo, it doesn't evenly happen to you. All of a sudden, all your skin goes to become this lighter color. It happens a lot in spots that are exposed to the sun, right? And so, and then it happens in like blotches almost. So it's not like it's a perfect, like, you'll have, you know, some people might have one arm that has vitiligo, you know, and it's completely void of melanin, and the other arm might not be, but like overall, his skin is not a case of vitiligo, it's a case of bleaching. I don't care what the Black community wants to say about that. But Michael Jackson and Sammy Sosa, you have to be really dedicated to bleach your skin. Like Vybz Kartel, he's a Jamaican music artist. He bleaches his skin. And in Jamaica, skin bleaching, Jamaica and Africa, they sell those products like prevalently, you know, where they like, they advertise it consistently, skin bleaching products. And you have to put that stuff on multiple times a day. You have to be dedicated to it, because as soon as you stop doing it, your skin, the melanin will come right back and stuff. So looking at Sammy Sosa and looking at how pale he is, that has to show you the level of dedication he's gone to remove all the melanin from his skin. I mean, it's from around his eyes. Like, he is putting that bleach everywhere, And to me, when I saw that, I'm like, this is not funny. This is scary. He's poisoning his skin, and he just, you know, and everybody around him is just letting him do it.
It's one of those situations where, like, a lot of times, like I said, it's all funny. And when Britney Spears was having her, like, meltdowns and stuff like that, Maria was just like, oh, well, like, yeah, it's funny, but no, she needs help. Like, there's a bunch of, like, yes men around him going, yeah, you look great. You look great, Sammy, man. Yeah, keep using the cream. And I don't say this to be funny, but he looks like Nosferatu. Like, he looks like he doesn't get any sun at all. Hmm. And
he probably doesn't. He probably does not go out in the sun very often at all.
We can break that down at another time, but take a moment to talk about my sponsor. My sponsor is this episode is brought to you by Odin Beard Cream. Odin Beard Cream, for when you want that Norse beard, go to Odin Beard Cream. There's no such thing as Odin Beard Cream.
Like, where did this come from?
I'm just gonna randomly spot out stupid sponsors from here on in. I have another question for you. This is a topic that's been heavy on my head recently, because of something that's been going on in comic books. There's been a Marvel Comics in general has been trying their best to make comic books more diverse. You see it with Luke Cage, the quote being it's unapologetically black. It's in Harlem, so obviously the cast should be predominantly black, like black or minorities. Jessica Jones, her next season is going to be directed by all women. Like their character, and with the comic books, they've made it a point to make no longer like characters like token. Like, they didn't throw Black Panther out there because he was a token black character. They threw him out there because he's legitimately a good character. He didn't become a really good character until they got a writer, Reginald Hoodlin, who I'm not sure if he wrote or directed the House Party movies, but he wrote the Black Panther book. And that was the first time I read a Black Panther book and was like, oh, I get it now. I get who he's supposed to be.
Okay.
So then Luke Cage has become more popular. So now you're getting characters. The Black Panther book was one of the number one selling comic books last year. But now there are talks of canceling Black Panther. They canceled another book called The Crew. They canceled a couple of other predominantly black and minority books because they weren't selling. And the first thing people run into Google and they go, well, it's not if they're not being supported. I'm like, well, yeah, that's, yeah, you know support your people, but if the product sucks, why am I gonna buy the product? So my question is, at what point do we separate support when you're supporting something that actually isn't good?
So I think that that's an interesting question, but like let's ask the question here about that. Are all things equal when you say aren't being supported? Because let's look at this is not the best example, but this is like the closest thing I can come to it right now because it's fresh in my mind. Okay, so right now we have two girls movies that like girls, you know, movies that cater to girls have all female cast.
Oh my god,
like,
they were the same exact movie. I know what you're talking about.
So right now you have Girls Trip that stars Regina Hall, Queen Latifah, Jada Pinkett Smith, and Tiffany Haddish. And then you have Rough Night, which stars Scarlett Johansson and a couple of four other actresses whose names I don't know. So Scarlett Johansson is like the headliner in that, right? And so when you look at, before leading up to the, because both movies came out this month, and they debuted, I think, either the same weekend or within a week of each other, right? Because Girls' Night, this is their second, they just passed their second weekend in the box office. And Rough Night, Girls' Trip, and Rough Night, I think, has been in the box office for about 2 or 3 weeks as well. Now, I kept seeing promos for Rough Night, you know, constantly seeing promos for this movie that was coming out, and it was supposed to be the comedy of the year. And the movie came out, and it basically was a flop, right? It got the most It got the most promo. It got tons of push and manpower and money put behind it. And it did not do that well at the box office on its first weekend. Now, in contrast, Girls Trip did not get as much studio push and love for it. But it, you know, the actresses, they did interviews. They, you know, they were on various shows and things. And they just talked up the movie. I saw a few, just a few, you know, things related to the movie coming out or whatever, but it wasn't anything nearly as supportive as I'm like, what is this from? I was like, what are these pictures from? Sorry, somebody just sent me a text message. So basically, all things were not equal, but Girls Trip blew the box office out of the water. I mean, I went to see it last weekend, and the movie theater was packed, and the movie theater was full of women of color. It was a large group of people, right? And we've seen that happen time and time again. Now, movies and books and all of that, you can say that they're not all the same, but they really are. If the audience is there and they feel like they are represented, and you look at Wonder Woman, then they had female-only showings of Wonder Woman. You look at Hidden Figures, and they had showings for just women and just women in the sorority, same sorority of the women that were the real scientists and stuff. And they time and time again have shown that there is an audience there. It's all about the powers that be and how much they put behind the product. Now, if you put out a product and you don't promote it, and you don't talk it up, and you don't do anything to get attention to it, then yeah, it's going to fail because people don't know about it. But you can have some people that are going to be savants, and they're going to say, you know, I really love this, and they're going to go behind it 100% every single time because it's Marvel. So Marvel could crap out the worst thing ever, and there are going to be people, maybe 10% of their followers, that are going to love it regardless, right? But then you're going to have some people on the flip side who are purists and don't want to see, and it's not, and for some purists, it's not about being racist, and it is about implicit bias and microaggressions because you have to, like, you know, kind of expand your idea of what creativity is, right? But in reality, those people are not going to be able to be swayed because they had a specific vision of how it should be, and they can't deviate from that. But then the rest of the population, so that's only 20% of the group. 80% of the people that could be a part of your population, there's no reason that you can't convert at least half of them into paying customers or people that are now interested in your product. And if you didn't, then that means if you couldn't, yes, you look at the product, then you wonder if you have a poor storyline. But I don't see how you think you have a poor storyline for a book that is, you know, you look at Harry Potter. J.K. Rowling got turned down many times before that book got published, and then it got turned into a movie. Black Panther is a movie already. And you're telling me you can't sell a book?
So now you bring that up and you talk about selling things. And I wrote a piece about this on the Old Man Wade Facebook page about how much they dropped the ball on this. First off, the name alone is called The Crew. The first thing I thought about was you can make all the money that you're quote-unquote not selling on comic books, you can sell on merch. Just T-shirts that just say The Crew. You know what I mean? The logo was sleek. The logo was sharp. It was easily recognizable. It was easily recognized. And then it was like, so okay, so there's that. But then the conversation came. Then the thought came up, well, who are the cast? Who are the members of the crew? You have Black Panther, who has a movie coming out in February. Eden Fezzi, he's an Aborigine. Who's slowly making his way becoming a regular character. Luke Cage, who's become extremely popular even before the Netflix show. Misty Knight, who everyone loved from the Luke Cage show. And then and lastly, you have Storm, who is arguably probably the most recognized black character in comic books, period. So to tell me that you have four black characters that are completely, well, we'll say two well-known black characters and two on the rise from over the last 2 years that tell me that you're canceling the book because the numbers aren't doing so well. Well, the numbers aren't doing so well because I don't see any promotions for this, like you brought up before. And I do a lot of Googling for comic book stuff every day. And I've seen a couple of things that say the crew or stuff, a couple of things that even mention this team, which kind of bugged me because it's like, this is the team you guys should be pushing. You guys want to, if Marvel Comics wanted to include black people in their comic books, this is the team that they should have been putting up front. And like I said, this comic books probably would have been $2.99, $3.99, so that's $4. They sell a t-shirt that they make that costs, what, $5 for them to make? They sell it for $20. They sell probably sell it for $30. You've made your money back. The more people are going to... People see me with these combo t-shirts and they go, oh, who's that? Oh, that's the crew. Well, who's the crew? And I always say it, or when I'm wearing... when I was first wearing Deadpool stuff before it became popular, like, oh, is that Spider-Man? I'm like, no, that's Deadpool. Who's Deadpool? I'm like, give him a Google. You'll love him. He's like the Punisher and Spider-Man had a baby. And he's become extremely popular. Now, when Black Panther comes out, and every person I've talked to who's really into this, I've heard people go, like, I'm not bootlegging this, I'm not streaming this. They're like, I'm going to go see that day of with a gang of people, and we're going to go sit up there, and we're going to fill this movie theater out. And what's going to happen is, Black Panther is going to do numbers like Wonder Woman did. Black Panther is going to do numbers better than Thor, they're going to do better numbers than Captain America, and then they're going to try to put the crew back out again. And then they're going to put Black Panther front page on that. And then I'm like, oh, well, like, and they're like, yeah, you should have supported this. You should have supported this from the beginning.
Well, I mean, how often, like, my problem with the statement of it's not doing the numbers, that, you know, when it comes to casts of color or even a cast that a movie that that has a female lead is that they don't put the same manpower behind those movies. So we're not even on an even playing field to what you would do for a movie or a concept, right? That is all male and largely white males. So the problem is that the studios are so used to women and people of color being the sidekicks that they don't know how to properly promote and put the manpower behind it, because I don't think that they know how to conceptualize these people. Like, you don't have to do anything different, but I think for them, they think it's heavy lifting because they feel like it's an extra step to convince the audience that these people are not sidekicks and that they're real superheroes like Captain America and Iron Man and Thor. And you don't have to do that. These people, you know, like these casts and these actors and these characters, if they're played well, as we've seen with many movies that have been flops and that have been, you know, like blockbuster, you know, hits, is that it doesn't take a whole lot for people to latch onto the characters. It takes a good, well-developed character in a well-written script, right? And then it takes the right person to act that out. You don't have to sit and recreate the wheel. But, you know, it's easier for the studios to say, oh, well, you know, let's just stick with what we know, right? So we know white men as leads. We don't know women as leads or, you know, people of color as leads as much. And so it's harder because they don't know how to also get to those audiences that are not necessarily their core. There are definitely more white males that are in the comic world, right? And so it's rare to see a black male that is so invested in comics. But those people exist, and I think that they do a disservice to the people, to those audiences by not showing them that they can be represented in this comic universe too.
Yeah, and then excuse me, I love bringing up the fact that when the person they picked to play Black Panther has made it a point, when you look at his filmography, the roles he's played have been important black roles. He played James Brown. He was Jackie Robinson. In actually, I think it's in September, October, he's going to be playing Thurgood Marshall before, you know, people really knew who he was. Before he was the first Black Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, correct? Mm-hmm. And then he's going to be playing T'Challa, who was the first, Black first black character to have an ongoing series. Like, he plays important roles. And you said something to the effect of, he chose his roles. So imagine the roles he's not taking, like the roles that could be detrimental to Black people, things that could hurt.
You already know how I feel. You know, I don't watch some slave movies and stuff. I'm like, listen, me and my people, we are beyond slavery. So I'm not here giving money to the 12 years of slave and the butler and the help and all that stuff. I'm not even going to give y'all streams.
I was upset. Me and the wife watched Hidden Figures a few weeks ago, and I was mad at myself for not going to see that in the theaters. But but I'll tell you right now, movies like that, I will be first in line to go see that when Marshall comes out. I will be first in line to go see that in Lux, feet kicked up, ready to watch this movie.
Go see Detroit.
Oh, that's this Friday, right?
But you lend yourself to a really important topic, is that he is being deliberate and very judicious about the roles he's taking on, because he does not want to have himself immortalized in roles that he doesn't feel represents him. You know, like it is empowering, right? So like, you know, it goes back to the Oscar so white controversy. It goes back to looking at all the Black people who have won, you know, lead actor or actress or best supporting actor or actress Oscars. And usually it's been for roles that are not seen as the best kind of representation of Black people, right? It's, you know, you're getting nominated for playing a slave. Like, why can't we get nominated for, you know, the documentaries we do, the really great movies that come out? And a lot of it is, you know, a power dynamic. But I think that the problem is that the studios fall back on the numbers aren't there, so, you know, we just feel it wouldn't be good enough behind it. And time again, people of color or women constantly show them that the numbers are there. Wonder Woman, even the studio, when they were pushing out Wonder Woman, did not think it was going to do as well as it did. And that movie blew everyone out of the water. And it's because representation matters. A movie like Wonder Woman, it's not just me and you that's going to see it. It's me with my daughter, me with my sister, me with my niece, and showing them that women, look at this powerful, like, fictional character, but like, she's kicking ass, she's doing amazing things, and she's the lead, she's the, you know, head bitch in charge in this movie. And that's what you want to push out to little girls, and they forget that representation matters, and people are more likely not just to come see a movie themselves, but to bring age appropriate people with them to see these movies.
Yeah, and I always said that one of the reasons I like Luke Cage as much as I do now, because before he was a stereotype. I tried to go back and read a lot of the old Luke Cage stuff, and I'm like, they basically, and it's even been said that they created Luke Cage to cash in on the blaxploitation stuff, and it was like, it was terrible. It wasn't until someone actually got a hold of him, and they didn't treat him like a Black character, they treated him like a character. You know what I mean? When I see a little kid who, or little Black kids, like, they have characters to look up to now. They have Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther. They have, I forget the guy's name who played Luke Cage, but they have a character like Luke Cage. Sam Wilson is the Falcon in the Captain America movies, but he's also Captain America in the comic books. They're villains. It's Black Manta. He's a Aquaman villain. You know, there are other characters out there. It makes me happy. And then, and even with the Black Panther movie, there's one of Panther's nemesis. One of his nemesis is a character called the White Ape. And when I found out they were doing this character, I'm like, oh, you guys better tread very lightly on this, because the costume in the comic books is bad enough, but when they created the character for the movie, he wasn't just some black guy in an ape costume, like, you know what I mean? He had a white ape pelt, but he didn't look like a giant stereotype, you know what I mean? It wasn't like some racists can't look at that and go, it's just a nigger in a monkey suit, you know what I mean? Like, everything, I don't know, have you seen the preview for the movie yet?
No, not yet.
No, if you get a chance, I'll send it to you after the podcast is over. But everything about that movie just screams, like, positivity. Like, and I've said this a million times, I think Michael B. Jordan, this is going to be, like, his Joker moment. This is going to be what Heath Ledger did for the Joker. I think he's going to do for this character Killmonger. I think he's going to take this role, and I think he's going to be absolutely fucking amazing in that.
So. I think so too. I mean, I look at the cast and I'm like, they have an all-star cast, and it's so much talent just oozing from the pictures alone. I can only imagine how the chemistry worked on set, because, you know, these are all people that are good actors and actresses in their own right. So imagine them coming together on this movie where it's all about black empowerment, black people running the show, black people, you know, and we need to see that more and more. And I think that's indicative of any ethnicity, but since I'm a black girl, I'm always going to ride for me and my people. So we need, and personally, because black people are kicked down by everyone kicks us down, we need this even more because of that.
My wife said something to me. It was actually after the podcast I was telling her, after the Remember to Hit Record podcast, I was talking about the conversation we had, and she said, black people are the only race who have a negative slur in every language.
Yeah, I said that on the pod too. Oh. Like, we are the only group of people that have a negative slur in every language. And so that should tell you how we are looked at as not even, like, I mean, how can you look at people as human if in every language you have a way to insult them?
It's impossible.
And it's not an insult that is, like, across the board. It is specific to black people. That's just, you know, I mean, black people are resilient, and we have some amazing, you know, you look at, like, the hundreds of years that we've endured, and we still are here, we're still thriving, we're survivors, we're thriving, we're doing it all, and we're still influencing culture, influencing the economy, influencing politics, influencing every aspect of life. So we have a strength that can't be broken, but that does not mean that we still don't deserve our dignity as human beings, right?
I agree. And you hit the nail on the head. It's not like we don't deserve the dignity as humanity. And this is, I forget what comedian said this, but Jalen Rose always says that comedians are the modern day philosophers, and I agree with that wholeheartedly. And it's at a point now where just saying Black Lives Matter is an issue.
Well, I mean, I like to ask people, okay, so which part of that do you have the problem with? The black, the lives, or the matter? I just want to be clear. Like, which part are we supposed to remove? And clearly it's the Black Lives Matter, but, you know, when, like, the very fact, okay, so recently, right, P. Diddy posted, P. Diddy posted
Sean a Combs. Tweet
on his Twitter account, and he said, shout out to black women just because. To me, I was like, I'm here for it, yes, because you were raising three little strong black women in your life, and you got strong black women as your mama and as your baby mamas, so you go ahead and you big this up, right?
Fucking right,
and
yeah.
So I'm like, here for that, you know, just because. Well, I mean, goodness, you would have thought that he said something else after that said every other woman of every other ethnicity ain't nothing, I ain't talking to you. All he said was, shout out to black women just because. And Twitter had, like, a firestorm. I mean, white women were saying, you know, all different types of people. Well, I don't understand why you're discriminating against us. And that is that is the problem, right? Because we can't just, black people can't just be proud of ourselves just because, and we can't voice it because it's seen as, and we can't advocate for each other either because it's seen as anti, it doesn't even have to say, because again, he said, shout out to black women just because, right?
He didn't say shout out to black women and fuck all y'all other people.
Just because it's Wednesday, just because the sun is shining, just because I looked out the window and saw a daffodil, and then I saw a dragonfly land on it, and I thought about the beauty of the black woman as the rays of sun fell on it. Like, he could have said anything after that, and he didn't. It was just because I wanted to post this. And everybody took it as a slight to them. And and this is only a fraction. Like, again, there was no slight to anyone on this, but then... no one, and for some reason, no one can picture what it's like to be the black woman when people constantly, this is just to circle back to the original first topic, is imagine being the person on the receiving end of negativity. Shout out to, you know, shout out to mixed girls just because black women who are dark-skinned ain't good enough. Can you imagine how that feels? He didn't even do that, but can you imagine how that feels? That's what Gilbert Arenas did. And Diddy, he, you know, just shouted out black women, and people had a hailstorm. So it's like people are so used to sharing in black culture that they don't understand when they are not, more and more when we are keeping things to ourselves.
What was it? I forget who said this, but it was like everyone's down for black culture till it's time to ride for it.
Oh, I mean, everybody wants to, you know, it was Paul Mooney. He said everybody wants to be the black man, so they got to be the black man.
Yeah.
And that's it.
I got nothing. It was funny because one of my big supporters, Just Greg, was saying that the first podcast I did, it was he expected to be goofier because, you know, I'm a goofy guy, and I was like, oh, I'll bring Miss Lady on, we'll make a couple of jokes, and this got super serious, which I'm perfectly cool with because,
I mean, you know, we can always make jokes, but, you know, I don't make jokes when it comes to my people now.
Yeah. You know what else kills me? And I've been thinking about this, and I've heard people go, well, why is there a black award show and a Spanish award show or a Latin award show, but not an all-white award show? I'm like, because you don't need to be picked up when you're already at the top. That's like telling someone who's, that's like telling someone who has a billion, that's someone who has said, like, that's like Bill Gates having a GoFundMe for himself. But dude, you got the money. You know what I mean?
That's a great analogy. And the thing is every award show is for you. We are just guests in the house. We want to have stuff in our own house. Is that okay?
You're like, hey,
is that all right?
Wait, we're paying
is
rent
it
too.
Okay?
I'm paying rent too. Like, you know, can I go in the fridge?
Is that if your award shows were more inclusive, we wouldn't need neither of these to be called the black ones or the white ones or the Spanish ones, because everyone would feel like they're a part of it. But when Oscars So White continues to trend every year, what can we do?
Yeah, if there was actual equality, we wouldn't even, but there would be no need for any of this at all.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, I am definitely here for my black people. I love being black. And, you know, and I've been asked by people many times who are not black, you know, would I change if I could change being black? And it's not like do you hate yourself? But it's just like one of those hypothetical questions and stuff. And I'm like, no. I said, if I could go back in the womb and choose, I'd be like, yep, make me that black girl, please.
Yeah, like, and I think a rapper probably said it, but it's like being black is a struggle, and struggle makes you tougher. That's just one of those things. All right, we're at the hour mark. I try not to go over the hour mark. So, can you do me a favor?
Exactly.
Can you do me a favor, Miss Lady?
Sure.
Can you say, damn it, Wade?
Damn it, Wade.